your martial arts movie podcast.
Ha-ha! I threw that shit before I walked in the room! Yeah!
Featuring drunken Thai boxer, Will.
Too bad you will die.
The also drunken wrestler, Mark.
I said I don't want trouble!
And drunken karate master, Zero.
You've lost your balls.
And now...
I know kung fu.
You know, baby.
Fists of Fail.
You and I are completely out of our elements talking about this month's theme.
You
right?
Yes. You chose the month from what are we, May now?
We're in May now. Yes.
Okay.
Right. Even though we record these in advance, but yes, I knew I wanted to do this theme regardless. I was maybe hoping for November because that is the 30 year anniversary of their debut album, but instead we're going to talk about their debut single. We're going to count their debut single, and by they I'm referring to Wu-Tang. Yeah, Clan. Oh yeah. See, I can't even get that right. No, of course Wu-Tang Clan. You and I are not Wu-Tang Clan aficionados. I feel like everyone knows a friend of a friend or a friend who was at one point a Wu-Tang, I mean Wu-Tang Forever, right? But who was a Wu-Tang Clan fan, but like I guess I was never really ran in those circles. But they love kung fu movies. We like kung fu movies. So why let's talk about their kung fu movies that inspired the Wu-Tang Clan, right?
Right.
That's how we very inadvertently came up with this theme for today.
Yeah, growing up, I had a friend who had everybody had the 36 Chambers of Shaolin album. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I remember from that album, I think this is the album, is the skit where the guy is talking about putting a coat hanger, like heating up a coat hanger and then sticking it into a man's anus really slowly.
Oh,
did you ever hear that one?
No.
I mean, it's actually kind of funny when you listen to it, but as I verbally describe it in detail, that is not trying to make a joke out of it. It's very horrendous.
Yeah, again, we are not Wu-Tang Clan, you know, fans. Maybe after this month, we might be more appreciative of them. But I mean, yeah, like growing up in the, you know, like the 80s, you know, like they, you know, they're late 80s and in the early 90s, you know, they're very inspired by a lot of, you know, martial arts movies at the time. And like, I think this is all within like, you know, like basic universal knowledge at this point. But so the point that we're trying to get here is that, you know, all the movies that inspired that their initial single slash album, like it clearly had a lot of influence on them. So we figured we might as well actually go watch them. And the movie we're going to talk about today, you guys can obviously, you know, use your eyes and scan the bottom of this, you know, when clicking on this, is Mystery of Chess Boxing. And it's a movie that you and I were supposed to see in theaters.
Yes, yes. The Museum of Moving Image in Astoria, mm-hmm, was having a retrospective on the director, Joseph Kuo. They released a nice Blu-ray set of a lot of his famous works. The Mystery of Chess Boxing was one of them. We were going to go see it. We got drunk beforehand. And then the day of, we found out that I think the 35mm print maybe wasn't in quality to screen. They were afraid it might have gotten damaged or something like that.
Yep.
So we ended up watching The World of Drunken Boxing. Is that the one?
Drunken Boxing or Drunken Master? I forget
which
one.
World of Drunken Master or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I fell asleep because I was drunk from drinking beforehand. So I guess this is our chance to catch up on the Mystery of Chess Boxing now.
Well, I actually stayed awake for that movie. It's entertaining. I mean, like obviously when something like that happens, when you go to a screening like that, you know, you have people who are presenting it. The MCs are basically giving you a little bit of lore and such. the people who are involved, the cast members in that movie are also in this movie. So Apoh, the character who plays, the performer who plays Apoh and the main character and his Sifu are actually like both lead characters in World of Drunken Master. But yeah, like, we're not talking about World of Drunken Master. Maybe we'll talk about it one day. That movie also has a bit of fighting. The story, I think, was a little bit more complex. But overall, I think Mystery Chess Boxing is a significantly more entertaining film because it is nonstop fighting.
Oh, God.
From beginning to end.
There is too much fighting. Yeah. In my opinion, there is way too much fighting in this movie, mm-hmm. to the point where I was getting, not frustrated, but I was like, where's the story? When can we get the character motivation? When can we get the development? When can you let me understand what everyone is doing in this film? Because they just front load you, mid load you, and back load you.
Yep.
With so much fighting, so much fisticuffs and interactions. I mean, they could have taken out the story and it probably wouldn't have even made it.
Yeah, right. I am counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6 fights in the movie that don't add anything to the story, like whatsoever. They're just in there. And it's all the scenes of the villain killing a bunch of random people that have no bearing to the plot whatsoever. Well, so you're right.
It does have bearing, but it took me the second watch to figure out who he was killing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's like, yeah. Oh, why is he killing random old men? Oh, that's why. That's why.
Yeah. And yeah. The villain's name is Ghostface Killer, or, you know, famous. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing. I think I want to safely guess it inspired the name of the Wu-Tang Clan rapper Ghostface Killa.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, just so you know, when I was, now I take notes before every episode. When I was typing the title for this movie into Google, it autocorrected me when I typed in the Mystery of Chess Boxing with a G. Google took away the G. Because it just recognized the term, you know, chess, you know, Mystery of Chess Boxing from the title of the album. Oh,
the Mystery of Chess Boxing.
Yeah, it was like weird. I'm like, whoa, right. That's really strange.
They're auto correcting you into incorrect spelling.
Yeah. But anyways, Mystery of Chess Boxing. I don't know. I thought this movie was very entertaining. I mean, I don't know if you agree, but it's just relentlessly. Just very high energy throughout the whole movie. I even when I thought that the story was very like scarce, I did think that the whole movie experience was like, oh, okay, I'm engaged, right? I don't know if you agree, dude.
So I'm a very big story proponent person. I want a good story, and then I want characters fleshed out so I can understand motivations. Because for me, when I like somebody and then they fight and then they triumph, it's a better feeling.
Yeah.
If I just see people fighting on screen, what's the difference between this and then watching someone's demo reel?
That's
so
true.
When I'm watching this, because of how scarce the story is and the character motivations are, I was like, I don't know. I was entertained for sure. I mean, we like fighting. We like fight scenes. Yep. But I love a fight scene that has great motivation because I think that just adds that extra oomph for me.
Yeah. Well, this is 78, 79, I think.
79,
I'm actually very impressed with a lot of the choreography in the movie. If we're just talking about the physicality in general, performed by James Lee, who plays Yi Min Lee, the main character. I guess we'll just refer to him as James. And then there's Jack Lung, who plays his Sifu, who kind of shows up halfway through the movie. Well, not really. Like, he doesn't really become his Sifu until halfway through the movie. And then lastly, there's the villain, Ghostface Killer, played by Mark Lung. But we're going to just refer to him as Ghostface Killer, because that's a fucking awesome name. Yeah, no, I mean, like, they're super physical, and, like, just seeing their choreography, even though it is, like, yeah, like, I don't want to keep on harping on this throughout the whole month.
Well, we have to, because maybe some people don't know we harp on it. Maybe they're just jumping into us for the first time, right?
Sure. No, well, the thing I'm probably gonna harp on for the entire month is we're gonna be covering older movies, and we don't want to sound like a broken record when we say like, oh, these are older martial arts films, they're from a certain era, so you have to be more lenient on it. And that's actually kind of like the lens I put on when I like look at this choreography. Like, it doesn't feel like they're fighting, it just feels like they're dancing. But other times, like when I suspend that disbelief, I can actually get into the fighting. They actually look like there's some like violent intent behind some of the movements, even though it looks kind of silly when you look at the poses or like what they're actually trying to do. But because like there's so much physicality and so much like force behind each movement, I can actually kind of buy into it. Again, I don't know if that's just me.
No, I think why I was also digging this is because the performers are doing these moves, very, very acrobatic moves, to a point where, yes, it kind of does look like a dance sometimes, especially when they're grabbing each other and they're kind of flipping around the screen. But because they're doing it at such an impressive level, I can kind of forgive that. Oh, this kind of looks like a dance, but I appreciate the talent that's going into it, how difficult these things are, despite the fact that it doesn't look like they're fighting each other. It looks like they're just moving together. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, again, that's like just how it was. I guess like after like Jackie like came on the scene, like that's when like things like start to like really pivot in a certain direction. Like, I mean, not saying that it's because of Jackie, but I'm just noticing that that's like a correlation. It's like, oh, you know, like at that point, like things started getting a lot more the speed of the choreography became a lot more heightened, and it became a little less blocky. You still get like that blocky metronome-y kind of movement, but it's hidden with the movement of the performers now. Like, rather than just seeing that their hands moving and then the rest of their body's like super stiff, like now everyone's moving like a lot more dynamically. Like, yeah, their hands are staying in place, they're being very like 1, 2, 3, but then the rest of their bodies are kind of like moving, like, you know, like it's like creating footwork, so like they're always in motion. That's like the thing I've noticed, you know, like with this movie specifically, because they are doing so many flips, doing so many acrobatics in this movie.
Back handsprings, yeah. So many just aerials, butterfly twists, butterfly kicks. It's just, it's almost too much. It's almost too much. But, Will, what is this movie about?
Oh, yeah. I guess I should do it, because I know you don't want to do it. All right. So, James Lee, the main character, is enrolled in a martial arts school, where he is being picked on by everybody, but he gets into a little wager with the cook, who is played by Xiu Tian Yuan, who is actually the actor who was the master of Jackie's master in Drunken Master 1, but he's also Yun Woping's dad.
Oh, right. Yeah, he looked familiar. I wasn't sure if that was him or not.
Right. He actually passed away not too long after this movie. So I'm wondering if the original script for this movie actually like involved him a lot more. But halfway through the movie.
Yeah, he's like in it for like that one scene. Mm-hmm. And then I think they mention his character again later, but I can't remember because I was getting the names mixed up a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, of course, like it's sometimes a little hard to follow sometimes, especially when like you know, like they mention character's name like once and then like you don't see them again. They mention what happened to that person off camera, so like, oh, I hope I'm getting these names right.
Right. But yeah, that was one of the frustrating things, is we didn't know anybody's name for maybe like the first 30 minutes. They finally say the main character's name, like Apol, like maybe at like the 30 minute mark, when somebody finally yells at him because he's being annoying or he did something wrong. I can't even recall at this point.
Yeah,
but anyway, so he's training with the cook,
Yeah.
Is that where you were? Okay.
Yeah, that's where I was. So he's training with the cook. The cook tells him, like, oh, I'm not your master, but like, when the time comes, I'll lead you in the direction of finding your real master. So Apo gets in a scuffle with somebody at the school. I'm basically giving the whole rundown. And I'll stop at a certain point. But he basically gets kicked out of the school for some reason. And he finds a new Sifu, played by Jack Lung. And then while this is all happening, there's a villain called Ghostface Killer, or Killer, sorry, not the rapper, who is going around just murdering people. And I guess you discover pretty early on, like, why he's doing it technically. He's trying to kill the people who tried to kill him a long time ago.
And that gets revealed a little later, actually.
Yeah.
That was one of the frustrating plot points for me when I was first watching it, because you are correct. There are a lot of random killings. It feels random when you're first watching this. And even when the fight ends, they immediately cut to another scene. And my brain was just kept on going, why? What is this? How does this relate to anything? And the issue, too, is... you know, the main Sifu and then Ghostface Killer, they have a similar look. They have that, you know, long hair pulled back into the, you know, the top bun, the beard, the long beard. It's only like the older Sifu whose hair is white.
Mm-hmm.
And Ghostface Killer, he has a kind of like a brown set of like robes throughout most of the movie.
Yeah.
But when we cut to him fighting these random people, his clothes change color. And at one point, his clothes are the same color as the Sifu. I thought that the Sifu was randomly fighting somebody. And I got so confused. And then finally, Ghostface Killer laughs with his back to the camera. So I knew he was a villain. And I realized, oh, that's a different person. I'm like getting so confused. I'm getting so lost.
Well, you watched... Well, what version did you watch? You watched the...
I watched the English dub.
Oh, you watched the English dub. Okay, got it.
Yeah, I did watch English dub. Yeah, with the original dialogue and the subtitles, they were going so fast. We don't have that, you know, that nice Blu-ray box set. So the quality of the subtitle dialogue was, like, not that great. I mean, it's there. Mm-hmm. But they're going by so fast, and I was just like, all right, I'm just going to listen to this in English. I think it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's the ideal or viewing experience from an American standpoint, right? I don't know. Like, maybe we should try, like, mimic the kind of experiences that, you know, young RZA or whoever, like, watched when they were growing up, although they didn't have YouTube back then. Yeah, yeah. That's a story. The reason why I brought up the whole, like, language thing is because, like, I skimmed through this movie a second time, listening to the original Chinese listening to it in Cantonese. And it's a completely different experience. At least, like, the way that I've it feels like for me. What's up?
So you were saying that when I was talking to you off mic, this is a comedy, and a lot of the jokes fall so flat. Yeah. And yeah. it's a comedy of the time. It has that jazz trumpet to highlight a joke just happened. The wah wah.
Yeah.
And so I'm not gonna, you know, it's just dated. That's just what it is. It's not funny for me. Maybe it was funny for people back then. But was there anything specific in the Cantonese that maybe stood out to you?
No, maybe it's just a language barrier thing. I mean, like, actually, what they did was listening to the English and then comparing it to the Chinese, they take the dubbing is actually pretty spot on in terms of, like, what the Chinese would, you know, the Chinese version would say. You know, like, they're saying, you know, like, especially in any moments where they're fighting and they're calling out the movements. And it's like, it sounds really clunky in English. But then, like, when I listen to the Chinese, I'm like, oh, I guess that makes sense. But it just really, like, it's too literal. It's like Tiger strikes with a golden claw. I'm like, that sounds stupid. And then, like, you hear it in Chinese, I'm like, oh, I guess.
Oh, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying. But it just, right. it, you know, they should have, like, spent a little bit more time translating that into a way that, like, would sound more audibly, you know, pleasing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. I was telling you off camera that, or off mic, that all the jokes, every joke in the movie is a womp womp kind of joke. They don't have any other kind of comedy, and it's like they set it up and you're just waiting for the punchline, and it's just all build up until like maybe like a full 2 minutes later you're like, oh yeah, there's the payoff, I got it like 2 minutes ago, but like you didn't have to keep dragging this out. Like the only thing that I found was kind of funny was when they did all that setup for when like the douchebag was about to drink piss. Oh, and I was like, that could be funny. But the joke, like, I could tell what the punchline was, like, a full, like, 3 minutes before payoff.
The whole thing drags out so long. Yeah. It's like, get me my tea. We know the piss is in the tea kettle. And in real time, we're literally watching him walk around looking for a cup. Oh, okay, here's a cup, pouring the tea, then walking back. It's just, it takes forever to get the piss to the older student. And by that time, we're like, yeah, we know he's going to drink it. We get it.
Yep. So the comedy, like, even though that falls flat, and like, it's funny, like, none of this should be a good reason for me to, like, enjoy the movie. Like, I think the comedy falls flat. I think that the story is kind of bare bones. And it's a lot. It does kind of drag at times, like, technically, because, like, the story isn't advancing. You get to a scene where it's like, ah, crap, Ghostface Killer's killing another person. That it's like, I mean, I know this isn't going to add anything to the overall plot, but it's like, they're all entertaining. Like, they're all, like, fun.
That's where I was getting frustrated with the one scene in particular is when, so just to elaborate a little bit on the plot, is Ghostface Killer is specifically looking for a Sifu or a Kung Fu master who teaches chess, right? Yeah. And he confronts some guy playing chess in his front yard. And Ghostface Killer is like, ha-ha, you must be him. They fight. He basically beats him to death, and before, you know, kind of striking the final blow, the guy he beats is like, oh, I'm not that guy. You're looking for him. He's actually over in the mountains. And Ghostface Killer is just like, ah, shucks. Meanwhile, I'm just like, oh, there was no point for this.
Yeah, that's what I mean when I say the random. And you could literally remove those scenes and it wouldn't add any, it wouldn't take away anything from the viewing experience. I mean, I counted. There's like Ghostface Killer has like 6-7 fights, like including the last one. That's a lot of people to fight.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah. And I get it. Like some of them are just people that are closely tied to his past because they try to kill him, but they didn't state the number.
That's exactly what it is. I think they said it was five or six people who he was intentionally looking for. So maybe the amount of fights does technically work out. He was killing this amount of people. One thing I wanted to ask you is, Ghostface Killer, his fighting style is the five elements. And it's kind of like Pokemon where one element can technically beat another.
Yeah,
but I kind of got lost in how that cycle worked. What beats what? I just had to go with it because I couldn't keep up with what the movie was telling me.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I can't visually tell the difference between one style versus the next when I was watching the movie.
The only style I could I really knew was like water was him just like kind of darting his hands out without a closed fist with like an open, like, you know, like open palm.
Yeah.
And then, oh god, fucking wood, that made me burst out laughing. Wood style is I'm gonna sit just rolling on the floor and start rolling on the dirt.
Yeah, yep, that's our villain. I mean, versus like gold or
I couldn't tell what gold was. And then I couldn't tell what metal was. I couldn't tell the difference.
I guess gold is the literal translation. I think metal and gold are technically the same.
Are they? Oh, okay.
Earth style. There's earth as well. I was like, what? I don't know. Like, that looks just like gold to me.
Yeah, earth, water, fire, gold or metal, and wood. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gold and metal are the same one. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's the five. Whatever. Is that like he basically fights everybody, you know, like using this five element style. I don't think they're very, very visually distinct outside of like the two that you just pointed out.
Yeah, that was my issue. I wish they were more visually distinct. And so, you know, surprise, surprise, our hero is learning how to defeat these styles. And we're never given that scene where he explains, well, this is the attribute of this style and this one and this one. This is how to defeat him. Basically, the Sifu at the end's like, do this. Now do this. Now do this when he recognizes the styles. And
yeah,
I wish the writing was a little tighter so those training sequences felt like it had more payoff in the end.
Right. I actually don't think that the training sequences added much to the movie at all. They're just obligatory. Like, we need them, right?
They add two moments to the literal end of the movie, and we won't go into that because that's a spoiler.
Yep.
You can listen to us talk about that in the Patreon section. But yes, that is the only time I think the training actually came into play. Later on down the line.
Yeah. like, who needs time? Who has time for training montages when you have Ghostface Killah killing more people? I mean, like, they could have written the story differently and be like, oh, Ghostface Killah had two people who try to kill him. And then it's just that. He tries to kill two people. Like, he has two fight scenes in the movie. Instead, they're like, oh, we have to have six. And I'm like, oh, my God. All right. Oh,
They went the opposite route. They bloated the movie up on fights and just, I don't know, subtracted story. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm really digging a lot of the performances, like the physical performances in the movie. That's why, like, I think I liked the movie as much as I did. I don't love the film, but I think it was like just very entertaining. So, specifically, James Lee, like. I mean, they're all great, but like James Lee, like he's super athletic. Like just watching him flip around and like hit a lot of his mark, it's like wow, it's like super impressive. And man, this whole, I mean, I guess I'll talk more about it in the action segment, which I guess we can get into now, unless there's something else you want to say. Generally speaking,
no, I think we can go into it. I think we elaborated a lot on the plot or the lack thereof and the general action. So, we can go into specifics now in the Patreon section.
Cool. All right, let's do that. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. We're at the point where we give our recommendations, but there's a whole wealth of audio you would be listening to here if you follow us on Patreon. There you can listen to the entire episode, including an exclusive action breakdown of the fights in the movie. But you can still support us by liking us on all the things and watch this and other episodes on YouTube with visual cues to accompany our discussion. And now on to our final thoughts. Yeah, and that's the mystery of chess boxing. All right, so I guess for this month, we should, have a unique grading gradient, I guess. I can't describe this properly.
Grading scale.
Yeah, I can't speak today. But all right, so does this live up to iconic status, right? Is this worthy of like RZA, say, you know, like, or you know, the Wu-Tang, like being, you know, like calling this movie out, being like, oh, this is like such a great film. It's like, does it really live up to that? Or is it just like they just grew up with it? It's their nostalgia. Is it that good?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that could very, very much be the case. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people like this movie, though.
I like it. Yeah, I'll say it. I don't love it.
You want me to go first then?
Yeah, okay. You can go first. Yeah, sure.
Okay, sure. So I mean, I enjoyed watching this movie, but I mentioned it earlier. I am almost always story and character first above fighting, even though I love a good fight scene, but that stuff can elevate a fight scene to even better status.
Mm-hmm.
So the story in this movie is just lacking too much for me. There is no denying the physicality and all the work that goes into all of the fight scenes and stuff. Like, if you watch it, you can tell. These guys are flipping all over the fucking place, sometimes without an edit for a while. So you know they took a while to rehearse this stuff. So kudos to the performers. It's on that metronome beat with this era of filmmaking, so like I can be a little more forgiving with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of the fights can get a little slow, but then the good ones at the end, specifically with James Lee and what's his name? Oh, Mark Leung. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just solid performers, and Jack Leung as well. They're really, really good performers. So anytime they're doing stuff, it really shines.
Yeah.
It's missing that thing that will bring it into more modern choreography for me, but that's probably the metronomy feel of some of the fights.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, this doesn't hold up for the status it's known for. I did enjoy the movie, but I just didn't care for the story or the character. So that's why for me,
sure,
it's not as good as I was hoping it would be.
Right.
But
right.
I still found entertainment out of it.
Sure, sure. Sorry, you had anything else to add to that? I was going to add on something you were about to say.
No, go ahead, go ahead.
Okay, well, all right. So the way I like to, like, imagine, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of, how these movies have influenced the Wu-Tang Clan. There are movies that actually resonated with them because it was like, oh, well, it actually kind of speaks to like the oppression and like they felt at the time, growing up in Staten Island. Again, I don't know that much. I just watched the Hulu show. That's the only thing I know of the Wu-Tang Clan. Listening to RZA talk about movies I grew up with, he speaks of it movies like Five Deadly Venoms, that resonated with them because, or 36 Chambers, which you covered much, much earlier. These movies really resonated with them because the stories behind it were about the man keeping, a certain, their them down, or there's actually political intrigue, or there's there's a lot to those movies, a lot of substance. This was just a movie that they just watched a lot because it was had a lot of fighting in it. That's it. They're just like, oh, this movie's cool. I think that's what it came down to. There's no substance to the movie. It's just they just liked it because it was a bunch of fighting in it. And I think that's their nostalgia glasses, blinding them. Not blinding as in negatively, but rather. They think that this movie is just cool. It'd be nice to reference the movie, but
My love for Beverly Hills Ninja.
Yeah. classic film.
That is a classic.
Great story.
I'll die on that
hill. You'll die on that hill. All right. Well, that would have been a perfect way to end the episode. But I'm going to echo everything you said. But somehow I still find entertainment out of it. The physicality is worth watching just for the sake of watching. You could totally, I guess you could watch the movie, watch fight scenes without the movie, individually, but it's that's not even
not
worth
really,
it.
Really, because there's too many fights.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to pick one at a time, I don't know. I kind of like the one in the kitchen when they're fighting. They feel like small vignettes of a larger picture. It's like you still have to watch. I feel like you still have to watch the whole movie, but. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, you watch and you turn your brain off, right? This would be a great movie to watch when you're high or drunk. I think
I don't know about that. This was good to watch while in the background, because I was just kind of playing with my phone on the second watch. And I was I could listen to the story more. And then when the fights came up, I would just kind of look up at it.
Oh.
And then when more story points came, I would, okay, let me go back to my phone. Because I know the story beats now.
Right.
So that's kind of how I see it. It's, you know, not a bad watch for something if you're not fully paying attention to it.
Right.
If you've never seen it before, then yeah, watch it all the way through. But
yeah,
maybe on a rewatch, I probably wouldn't watch this again. I think I got everything I needed out of it. But I did like the choreography. I think the choreography is pretty solid for a movie from 79.
Right. Yeah, well said. All right, go watch Chess Boxing. It's a piss-drinking good time.
Ew. No, I do not agree with that sentiment.